BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from NFL playoffs to pro and college basketball, UFC, MMA, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable, BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE to receive your rewards. That's BLEAV, BELIEVE, to receive your rewards. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. Welcome to Believe in Celtics, brought to you by Bet Online. I am Warren Shaw. He is the great Gary Washburn, and we are your hosts and resources for everything Boston Celtics this season. Gary, it's been a minute, but good to be back in the booth with you. How you been, family?
Very good, Warren. How's it going? Obviously, a lot going on in the sports world and NBA. So always something to talk about. You know, we can get our Shannon Sharp on. Just when you thought the NBA
went 0 days without drama.
just thought when you thought the NBA wasn't fun to cover, boy, you just get Friday night in LA. So it's always something with the league. So yeah, definitely looking forward to a good conversation.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that Shannon Sharp thing was hella interesting. I went to bed, so I woke up to it, and I was like, what happened? So all the memes, all the conversation, all the, you know, the ish talking, it's, yeah, man, the league is so fun to cover. But we'll get into some more Boston Celtics conversation here specifically. As always, we got to do our plugs. You know, make sure you give our show a 5-star rating on any or all of your podcast platforms. Follow us on Twitter at GWashburnGlobe. Follow me on Twitter at ShawSportsNBA. Follow the Believe Networks as well, too. So first order of business, Celtics continue to rock it out, man. 9-game win streak here as we record. Big 4-game week coming up here too, with Orlando trying to get some revenge against that team, the Miami Heat, the New York Knicks, and the Los Angeles Lakers. Orlando might get Jonathan Isaac back. Obviously, won't be too impactful in terms of his minutes, but the Lakers could get AD back at the end of the week. But over the weekend, Marcus Smart tweaks his ankle. Just quickly, Gary, any news on Marcus? Anything for the Celtics fans to worry about, or is this going to be a minor situation?
Yeah, with Marcus, I don't think it's very serious. Obviously, he's a durable guy who's been, you know, had a lot of injuries over the years, but always is able pretty much to bounce back from those. So it sounded like it was just a rolled ankle. X-rays negative now. Will they give him to be cautious a couple of days off? You know, I think so. When you have now a five-game lead on your next competitor in the Eastern Conference, you might want to start giving guys a little bit of a break, as they did, as you saw, Warren, with Jason Tatum with the wrist injury. But obviously, he had played 48 minutes, 7 seconds, and then went over Golden State. He needed a break. So I think, you know, they've got enough depth. Obviously, with the way Peyton Pritchard's playing, we can quite honestly talk about that, because I thought that was a highlight of the game in Toronto. Give Marcus a break for a couple of days, maybe try to bring him back on Thursday or maybe toward the weekend. But it looked like just a rolled ankle. You hope, if you're a Celtic fan, it's not one of those high ankle sprains or one of those things that's going to keep him out 2-3 weeks. You know, but he seems to be Marcus is a durable guy. He's always getting nicks and knacks from his physical play. So I don't think it's anything serious. I think he'll be back in a couple of games.
Well, that's great news for Celtics fans for sure. Again, the depth is something that this team continues to hang its hat on. So let's kind of dive into the Pritchard situation, not only from the Toronto aspect, but for this 4-game week ahead, you know, against the opponents we just mentioned and alluded to. You know, this is kind of dual fold. We've spoke about Pritchard as a potential trade target. I believe that was even on our last show. So do you think this is an opportunity for Pritchard to earn minutes, really? Or is it an opportunity for him to showcase his minutes and showcase his ability to another team? Or again, he's just too valuable in case of an injury situation like this. Kind of what are your thoughts on Pritchard going ahead and maybe even recapping a little bit of what he did in Toronto?
Yeah, I thought he was very good in Toronto. He hit some big shots, 4 3-pointers in the fourth quarter when they were obviously down, Marcus. And we didn't talk about Robert Williams being out with his kind of tweaked knee, Jalen kind of backing into his knee. And I think they see anything that's wrong with Robert's knee, let's pull him and let's get him some, you know, some ice and take some maybe a day or two off, because obviously they don't want to jeopardize him for the postseason. So I thought Peyton Pritchard stepped up real big. You know, that's the thing. You know, when you have all this depth and you sign Brogdon, as we talked about before, he becomes not expendable, but he's not seen the playing time that he did his rookie year. Rookie year, Brad really liked him. He got into a lot of games. He was able to kind of make a good impression. But then when Ime Udoka took over, his minutes suffered, and it's been kind of the same this year. But he's an asset that I think they need to play more of. I think we need to see more of Peyton Pritchard on the floor, because he makes plays, not only three-pointers, steals. I always compare him to kind of a T.J. McDonald at Indiana, where that guy is just a damn pest on the floor, or Jose Alvarado, you know, in New Orleans, just a pest. And a good team needs those type of guys. Those guys you can't turn your head, you can't sleep on. They're going to try to steal the ball. They're going to try to make a play. Peyton's not afraid to play against bigger players. Obviously, growing up, being 6 feet, 6'1", in a game of filled with giants, he's learned how to get his shot off. He's learned how to play against bigger players. So I think they should hold on to him throughout the trade deadline. And as we talked about, Warren, I mean, this is the year. If we're looking at the NBA right now, you know, if you're looking at the teams, like the Celtics are starting to create some distance now. They could get caught very easily. Yeah. But Philadelphia is the only team that's kind of keeping up with them, because Philadelphia, that 5-0 West Coast road trip, good win Saturday night against the Sacramento Kings out Embiid. I don't know what that says about Sacramento when you lose to Philly without Embiid and without Harden, but they did. The Kangs will be Kangin. But, you know, I think that the Celtics now have a little bit of a luxury to try to prepare, you know, a little bit forward, as opposed to trying to grind out and win every game. But I think you hold on to Peyton. You worry about next year. You worry about his rookie extension this summer. Same with Grant Williams. Like, you try to make, you know, you try to win the championship this year. He's going to help you do that, right? And I think, especially as we talked about, Warren, Sam Hauser's really, really tailed off. And I think I think everybody was kind of like, wow, this is the guy they've been looking for. The guy who come off the bench, just drain some threes, the Duncan Robinson of their team when Duncan was doing well, you know, and that just hasn't happened over the last, you know, month and a half now. Hauser's kind of been in a slump. So why not give his mate the minutes to Peyton? Because Peyton can be active on defense. I think with a guy like Sam Hauser, if he's not going to hit threes, it's hard to have him on the floor, you know, because he's not going to stop anybody defensively. He'll try. It's not from lack of effort. It's just he's not a great defender. Where Peyton, I think, can play a little bit better on both sides of the ball. I think Mazzulla sees that. So I think with the kind of the drop off of Sam Hauser and injuries, Peyton Pritchard's taking advantage, and, you know, he should take advantage. And I think the Celtics need to hold on to him.
Yeah, I think those are great points, Gary. You know, again, obviously we talked about Pritchard a lot on the previous shows we already discussed. And I think, you know, as you look into this four-game week here, great opportunity for him to continue to maybe earn minutes long-term, especially if Hauser continues to struggle, et cetera, et cetera. And you just find a way, you know, to make that work, especially with the Celtics' ability to switch defensively. It doesn't necessarily have to be a major liability, but you're not going to want him out there, you know, like 40 minutes a night. We understand that too. But definitely spot minutes, rotation, definitely is a guy who can be pesky, shoot the three ball, you know, at a high clip, and really give you a positive boost off that very, very actually nice bench that I think the Celtics have been able to formulate this year. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, not just necessarily Pritchard, but even kind of, again, this four-game week specifically. So Orlando, first game in Orlando, tough game early in the year that they were able to eke out, basically just how I really just outscored them. And I know that's obviously the name of the game in the NBA, but it was just the offense that took over. I think probably something we'll get into a little bit later on here is, but I think they had two embarrassing losses, maybe not so embarrassing, but tough losses, you know, at home in that home and home or back-to-back, whatever those mini series situation is, you know, I guess just about a month or so ago against Orlando when they were really hot. Then Miami. Miami also last time Boston Celtics played, you know, won. I believe that was an overtime game. And, you know, I live in the Miami area, so they were very excited about that. And, you know, they're the Heat Instagram talking all kinds of stuff as well, too, you know, after that game. The Knicks have been playing great basketball. And then again, you get the Lakers. One of the more crazier games the Celtics have played again this season. The Lakers get AD back, presumably back at that. Again, big four-game week, lots of storylines, lots of drama, lots of things connected to kind of like some lore and history with Boston and these four teams. I guess it's rivalry week. Also, yeah. I think in the NBA is how they've kind of launched it. Orlando doesn't fit into that mold, but again, I think just how things have gone this year. What are your thoughts on this week up ahead? Like, what are you expecting to see? Is there any type of, you know, wanting to get back against Orlando? Or that's just over. Those two games, like, they've not even thinking about that anymore. You know, just give me your thoughts on this week ahead.
Yeah, Warren, I think the Orlando game, some important game for them. I mean, you know, you want to make a statement. They beat you twice in Boston. I thought the first net matchup, the Celtics played poorly. And the second matchup, you know, the Celtics played better. They played better defense, but they just couldn't get it by a break. And that, as we saw that game, Paolo Banchero hit six threes. Admiral Schofield hit three threes in a 9-minute stretch where he had 13 three-pointers the entire season before that game. Like, just some real wacky things happening. And, you know, unable to get an offensive defensive rebound where Markelle Fultz kind of grabs a key rebound. And then they called that strange, wacky end of the game play where I think, you know, they were somebody, Jalen fell down and Grant had to launch like a, you know, it was just, that was like poor execution down the stretch, but I thought they played better in that game. But they have trouble with Orlando's size. Orlando's a big, big team. One of the biggest, probably the biggest team in the NBA, the Wagner brothers. You know, then you've got Banchero, who's a legit 6'10". Then you've got Mo Bamba. Then you got Bol Bol. And then you got now Jonathan Isaac. We don't know how many minutes he'll play, but obviously I think he's, going to finally make his debut after. I mean, I remember literally being in the bubble, Warren, when he got hurt, like August 2020. I mean, the bubble was a minute ago. I mean, yeah. I mean, as much as if the pandemic was still, you know, so we're still – feeling the effects of the pandemic, it's still here, but that was literally 2.5 years ago. So, I mean, I don't know how much what they can expect, but that makes them even bigger because they're just they're a big team. But the Celtics struggle with big teams. We've seen it. The Chicago Bulls, yep. You know, teams like that. You know, they struggle with those big guys. So that's going to be a challenge. And Tatum will be back after a couple of days rest, so we'll see. You know, he didn't play. You know, he admitted he went to his son's 5th birthday party, you know, and missed the game that they lost, the second game. So I think they have a point to prove. And then Miami, tough back-to-back. I think the Heat are a team that's looking, you know, they feel like they can beat the Celtics. They're trying to get on track, but they keep – I mean, they just have had a myriad of injuries. And as we know, and you down there – Warren, like, if you have a hangnail, the Heat are going to keep you out. Like, the Heat do not play guys hurt. Like, just they just don't. Like, if it's Lowry, Butler, whoever it is, it's like there's some – you can either – you know, it's one thing to have a lot of injuries. It's one thing that a lot of little knickknacks. A lot of teams have knickknacks, but those guys play. The Heat, for whatever reason, keep a lot of guys out. And, you know, I think their mentality is, listen, you know, let's just get the 5th or 6th seed. You know, we'll be that sleeper team. Let's just make sure we're healthy by April 15th when the playoffs start. Then we can make a run, and then we feel like we can win on the road, especially with Jimmy buckets. You know, that dude's a gamer. So I think it's a tough game. They're going to look forward to beating the Celtics at home. Another national TV game. The Celtics, you know, there's a rivalry there. And then the Knicks, they haven't seen the Knicks for a while, you know, a month or so ago. The Knicks play very good defense, but they're a little bit erratic and inconsistent. You know, they're not a good home team, but a better road team. So we'll see. And then the Lakers, you don't ever take the Lakers lightly with that big number 6 that there. You know, you don't do that. And, you know, they got guys coming back. Dennis Schroeder coming back with probably a little bit of a point to make about why they kind of, you know, shipped them off. And quite honestly, Warren, as you know, I mean, when they shipped him off last year, that's kind of when they took off. That's when, you know, they picked everything up in terms of their play. So interesting week, you know, you say a rivalry week, and you know, and for the Celtic fans, the Celtics Magic used to be kind of a rivalry. Remember in the late 2000s when it was.
Yeah,
you know, they met in the playoffs a couple of times, and then they met in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2010. So in the Dwight days, it used to be a kind of a rivalry. I remember being in Orlando for a Christmas Day game. So they matched those two teams on Christmas. I want to say in 2010, being in Disney for that game. So you know, I think it's an important week for the Celtics. They appear to be motivated, and I was really encouraged, you know, by the win against Toronto. I just thought Toronto, I mean, now there was no Van Vliet, okay, and now that's a big factor. There was no Tatum and then no Smart and no Williams, and I just thought the Celtics were the tougher team. I'm a little, and I don't know what you think about the Raptors. I've always, you know, the Raptors have always been a thorn in the Celtics side. Yeah. They've always given them, ever since the days of DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, just they've always gotten the best. But it just seems like they just don't quite have it this year. And it just like them letting go of the rope. And that game on Saturday, I thought was interesting. Like, you know, it was just kind of like, you know, something isn't right up there. And they got, because you look at that team, Warren, you know, you got, you know, OG Anunoby who's injured. But I've always liked OG Anunoby.
Hard not to.
Yeah. Siakam, Precious Achiuwa, Gary Trent Jr., you got talent on that club. I mean, you know, and they just kind of let go of the rope against, you know, guys like Grant Williams and Peyton Pritchard. So if you're the Celtics, I thought that was one of the more impressive wins of the year, given the circumstances.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there as well, too. And I think with Toronto, you don't know exactly where they're going. You know, Ujiri is obviously one of the better GMs, or is touted as one of the better GMs. And if they're going to sell off some parts, unfortunately, I don't think it will be to the Boston Celtics, because they're not going to do anything within the division in a conference for sure. So I think if Boston's looking for help in any capacity, they'll have to look west. And so as we kind of wrap up here, this first segment of Believe in the Celtics, talking about that four-game week, you know, guys coming back from proverbial teams, but looking west, there was a story that came out earlier part of last week with Jakob Poeltl being of the eye and desire potentially of Boston. I wouldn't necessarily desire, but the kick in the tires, right? Which kind of goes against our premise, because we've been talking about more of kind of a stretch four. Poeltl does not meet any of those requirements. While he is a nice rim protector, good rebounder, I just don't know how he'd fit into Boston's current scheme, really coming off the bench behind, you know, Horford and Williams, obviously when healthy. A great insurance policy to have, but I don't think he's looking to go anywhere to be anybody's insurance policy. So let's talk briefly about the Jakob situation, or maybe the lack thereof, and maybe what else might be out there for Boston.
Yeah, Warren, I mean, I think Poeltl's like probably, I mean, if you're at the, you know, used car lot or whatever, and you're looking at the best used car on the lot, what you can get in terms of a guy who can help you, Poeltl's probably the top of the line in terms of like a guy who will, you know, free agent next year, a rental guy, a guy that could really help you in terms of like, you know, doing the dirty work in the paint, the rebounding, obviously, defense, things like that. But the question is minutes. Now, then again, you look at what just happened to Robert Williams, where anything that happens to Robert Williams, and we're like, you know, everybody's spooked, right? Everybody's get scatterbrained, because you just don't want, if you're a Celtic fan, you know, oh, he's out for 6 weeks. Oh, he's out for too much. Oh, he needs another knee procedure. Oh, he re-tore the ligament. His meniscus is like, you don't want any of that bad news. So the question is, do you need another legit five to maybe relieve Robert a little bit and take some load off until the playoffs? And I think Poeltl would be the high end of that, but I also think you can go cheaper and sign a guy off the street. You can sign DeMarcus Cousins if you want, if you really want a five, because I think for them, Al's 36, Cornett gives you quality minutes. Mm-hmm. Cornett is Cornett. He's not a great rim protector, but he does everything he can. He is, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's gotten the best out of his ability. Luke Cornett is one of those guys that, he, you know, he'll, when he's finished playing, whenever, he'll just say, hey, tell his grandkids, I played the NBA and I got everything out of, I was not the most skilled guy, but hell, I got everything I did good out of my ability. I think he does. But do you need kind of a tough guy in the paint? Do you need a guy to lay some wood, give some hard fouls, get a key rebound, you know, push a guy out the post. Don't let guys, you know, think you probably do, because I think honestly, Warren, like, is Blake Griffin that guy? I think they've kind of got with Blake, you know, in case of emergency, break glass. Like last night Saturday when they needed Blake to get in and get some minutes, they threw him in there. He made a couple of hustle plays. He did, you know, picked up a couple of good fouls, like did what Blake does. But is that enough? Or do you need someone else whose body is a little bit more agile to be able to come in there and relieve Robert? And I think that's what they do need for I think, of course, everybody would love that stretch four, that wing guy who can knock down threes, that you know, guy who can come off the bench. I think of like Otto Porter last year for the Warriors, like that guy can come off the bench, defend, 6'8". I think they'd love that guy. And those guys are hard to get, yeah. You know. So I think in the Pirtle situation, that's a high end. You'd have to give up Gallinari, okay? And that's another factor. Is Gallinari going to come back this year? Like, does he – is there a chance? And I think the Celtics are like, listen, like, we can hold off to the playoffs. If Gallinari's ready, and he's ready to go by May 10th, the second round, we can hold on to him. If not, you move them. But then are you willing to give up Pritchard? You know, are you willing to give up someone else who you value? Because that's what you're going to have to do to get Pirtle. I don't think that's possible. I think that they try to go a little bit on the below the bargain basement and grab a guy, or the buyout market, or we don't know who's going to be available February 9th. We don't know who's going to be sellers. What right. teams are going to, you know, but that's the thing about this play-in tournament, Warren, we talked about before. You know, every team thinks they're in it. Last I look at the standings, there's probably four teams, and I think Charlotte, Detroit, Houston, and, oh, boy, it's the other one in the West, that are like, okay, they got no shot here. Like, right. they got no shot. Oklahoma City's got a shot. Lakers have a shot. Like, you look at the standings, and it's just like everybody's got a shot. So how many sellers are there going to be out there? You know, because I called up. Yeah, the Spurs. I'm sorry. The Spurs, Rockets, Hornets, and Pistons are pretty much the only teams. And the Magic are kind of on the outside. But, I mean, do they need to get more draft picks. You know, they got enough. They got enough young guys. So they're just playing – trying to get better. So if you're the Celtics, it's hard to determine what's going to be out there because everybody's trying to contend. Nobody wants to, you know, blow it up at this point, you know? Yeah. I mean, so what can happen? I think it'll be an interesting next couple of weeks before the trade deadline, obviously before, you know, February 9th, a little bit before the All-Star game now. We'll see what happens. But I think the Pirtle situation is something to look at, but I don't think unless the Spurs lower their asking price and then the Celtics decide they want a deal like Pritchard, it's a realistic possibility.
Yeah, I think those are great points, Gary. Once again, you know, it is a little like luxurious, you know, to kind of go that route after somebody like Jakob. Again, obviously great, great value player, but I think probably more than what Boston actually needs and be willing to pay in essence to kind of bring them on board. There are some probably cheaper players available out there, especially when it comes to the trade deadline. I think that point, like, you just cannot reiterate enough, you know, as we get closer to the ninth, maybe Chicago is like, yeah, we're not there. Charlotte, yeah, we know we need to probably really dive into this tanking thing, because I don't think Charlotte went into the season thinking they were going to be this bad, but the realization is they are. Now do they start moving off some pieces here as now as well too to get into the Wembanyama sweepstakes for them? And I think a ball Wembanyama thing would be amazing for them long term. Oh, so they really should be investigating that scenario heavily. Great conversation here as always. Make sure you're following Gary on Twitter at G Washburn Globe, getting all the great insight stuff here on the Boston Celtics. you know, rumors, especially as we get towards the trade deadline here with Boston. So that'll do it for our first half. We'll come back here on the other side of this with our Genotime segment to kind of break down the Celtics' first half of the season, give out some grades and some expectations, maybe not necessarily awards per se, but just kind of give some accolades for some of the things that have happened in this first half. We'll be right back here on Believe in Celtics, brought to you by BetOnline. And on this week's segment of Genotime on Believe in Celtics, we are going to be discussing the first half of the season, where the Boston Celtics finished the first half as the best team, first team to 30 wins. Really realistic chance here at a 60-win season. I think they have to go 25-8 here to kind of close things out. And it's possible. You know, it's very possible. Don't know how necessary it is, but it is something that I think is possible. So let's just start there, Gary. You know, we know coming into the year, Boston said, like, they're not taking this regular season lightly. They were going to come out here, kind of balls to the wall. We're going to play hard. We're going to try to hear show, despite all the drama in the offseason. Like, it seems like almost years ago, like, you know, to come comparatively to where we are and how they've been playing. Is 60 wins something you think Boston is trying actively to attain, or just finish off the season as many wins as possible?
Yeah, I think as many wins as possible. Number one seed. You know, I don't know if they're going to, I don't know if there's going to be, it's going to be one of those years. I don't know if there's going to be a 60 win team in the league this year. 25-8 is not inconceivable. That's a strong record, but not a, you know, that's not an amazing record. I mean, they're 34-12 now, so they've done that. And it all, you know, we'd have to look at the schedule and see, you know, some of the opponents they have left. Yeah. and who, you know, I know they still got three left with Philadelphia, three left with the Knicks, two left with the Nets. Obviously, they haven't played the teams like they haven't played the Jazz yet. You know, they got a lot of, you know, they got I think three more with Milwaukee, another I think two more with Cleveland. So they got a challenging schedule, you know, toward the end, obviously. But I think they just want that number one seed. You know, they want home court throughout the playoffs. They want to, you know, they want that game seven at TD Garden potentially. And I think that they're worked toward that. And I think their goal of taking the regular season seriously and not playing no games has come to fruition. I think that's the thing, that they have been that team that has got off to the good start like they wanted. They didn't want to struggle like they did last year. They've done that. So I think they've accomplished all their goals so far. You know, they've gotten guys involved. They've jumped out to a nice, you know, not comfortable. I don't think 4.5 games is comfortable, but all the other teams, you know, besides the Sixers have hung in there. You know, they've won 5 in a row, but the Bucks are going through their problems. The Nets don't have KD. The Cavaliers are kind of up and down. They lost to the Warriors the other night without Steph, Clay, Draymond. Yeah. You know, like whoa, what are you, like, on a back-to-back? I mean, and remember, the Cavaliers are a losing team on the road. They're one of the worst of all the playoff teams, or teams in the top 10. They're ninth. Their road record is ninth in the NBA. In the 10 Eastern team. So Cleveland has not shown they can really consistently win on the road. So everybody's got their issues. The Celtics have avoided a lot of those issues. They went through their rut in December. They've gotten through it. They had their bad loss at Oklahoma City. You know, they've come back and responded with 9 straight wins after that. So if I'm the Celtics, I'm feeling good about myself. And then also, you know, do you want to get 60? I think that's a good thing to try to go for 60, but don't wear your team out. Don't wear out Tatum and Brown. Make sure those guys get some rest, and we'll see what happens toward the end of the season. Will they need to get, you know, a win or two to claim the number one seed? Is it rest over? You know, as we saw, remember that last game in Memphis where they could have lost and quote unquote had an easier road and or whatever, but they ended up winning, getting that number two seed and getting that game seven at home against the Bucks. But they ended up, you know, they could have dropped and maybe did the 4-5 thing, but they played the right way. So I think they'll play the right way. Knowing Joe Mazzulla, he's going to push those guys not to the limit, but he's going to make sure that those guys get all of what they can out of them and try to win every game.
Yeah, I think those are great points again. And, you know, the way Boston should play, 60 is not necessarily a magic number. It doesn't indicate that you'll win the NBA championship if you get 60 wins or whatever. So that doesn't necessarily matter. But as you alluded to, just playing good basketball, being healthy and staying again at the top of the conference, if you want to make sure that you have home court, especially if it comes down to game sevens. Really quickly on this point here, too, what would you give the Celtics in terms of an overall grade? You know, A-, B, B plus, like where would you rate the Celtics first half?
I give them like a B plus, A minus. I mean, the only thing is that rut, you know, the two losses to Orlando, losing to the Warriors, kind of getting spanked for the first, like some of that you can't give an A because there's room for improvement. But I'd say an A minus, B plus. They accomplished what they've wanted. The best team in the league right now, best record, obviously, number one seed in the East, all what they wanted, they've been able to accomplish. They didn't want to go through this 20-20 start, then, you know, like a lot of teams are doing now, the Heat and all these teams that are just kind of like stumbling and bumbling a little bit and now got to figure out how to pick it up. They don't have to do that. You know, the Celtics, they have good team chemistry. The locker room is a good, positive locker room. The guys like each other. And they all have that one collective goal. I think that before the season, you know, obviously with the Udoka situation kind of threw them into a loop a little bit, but they all asked, I think people were wondering, well, how is this team going to respond to losing in the finals? You know, what's going to happen? You know, and you look and it looks like they've responded. It looks like that really had an impression on them to watch Golden State celebrate on their floor for them to think, look and say, you know what? If we had made 3, 4, 5 more plays throughout this series, we could be that team celebrating. You know, it wasn't a big, you know, especially that game four, wasn't a big difference in between the two teams. It was depth and experience and all that other good stuff and Steph Curry. But I also think the Celtics looked and said, you know what, we could be that tougher team. We need to get tougher. We need to get more resilient. We need to make some things happen. And that's what they've done. So I'll give them an A-.
All right. I like it. And I will, you know, I think I will double down on that. You know, I think it really is an A-. As you alluded to, there are some glaring things, if you will, during some of those rougher stretches, and you just don't want to make sure like those don't become habits, if you will, make those maybe blips in the radar and, you know, again, not habitual things that like send you down the path. And I think they've righted that ship. They have had a couple of maybe not so amazing losses, if you will. So then I think that's where I'll go to you for you next. First half of the season, what do you think was the worst loss? You kind of mentioned it. Was it that OKC loss, or was there something that was a little bit worse to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Golden State game was at Golden State was not a good one. But that OKC loss where the Thunder were just really rubbing it in and the Celtics seemed like they kind of gave up in the third quarter was probably the low point. Even though, you know, it's one game and they were able to bounce back, you would hope that they would, you know, learn from that experience, learn that they're going to get other teams' best shots. Like, you know, is it a situation where, you know, it can't be cliche-ic or whatever. It can't be cliche-ic to say, oh, well, you know, we're getting everybody's playing their best against us. But, yeah, I think it's in many cases this year it's happened. You know, the Clippers played a really good game against them. The Warriors last week, Warren, you saw the game. I mean, the Warriors were – that was a good club that, you know, now, you know, we'll see what happens, how they move forward. They were able to win the next night at Cleveland, so maybe they kind of found something that they've been looking for. But the Warriors played very well against the Celtics most of the game. And so they have to learn from that experience. I think that's what they've done, is learn from that Oklahoma City loss. So I'd say that's a low point in a sense, but it didn't last long. They were able to bounce back. They were able to get that win at Dallas and jump Dallas and beat a team that, you know, has got, you know, so I would say it's a worst loss of the season, but it didn't prolong to a losing streak, you know?
Got you. Yeah, no, and I think that actually makes a lot of point too. I forgot about the OKC loss and not no SGA and all that as well too. For me, I'm actually going to pick that loss on the road and kind of in that rut against the Clippers. The Golden State one was so just emotionally draining. And I think I was really expecting them to kind of bounce back. I remember us even having the conversation about, you know, Brown and Tatum Obviously, we thinking them surpassing the duo of PG and Kawhi, or whatever the case may be. The Clippers just came out there and handed it to them, you know. And I was disappointed because I believe there was a day off in between that. Like, yeah, the Golden State game was a Saturday, then they played them on a Monday or whatever. And I thought they were going to just kind of lick their wounds and like, all right, whatever, you know what I mean? Go out here and give them the business. So I did not enjoy that one too much for them as well. But I think that OKC loss for me would obviously be very, very close second. And the Orlando loss is, you know, that weekend was pretty tough to kind of endure for Boston. But let's go ahead and move on to something positive. And what do you think is the best win of the season for Boston thus far?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. I thought they've had a lot of those impressive wins. To me, I thought the win, I thought the home win against the Clippers with full Kawhi and Paul George coming back. I'm trying to look at this roster of wins, there's a load of wins here, and you know, the Christmas Day win against Milwaukee, where they were able to get themselves together and play well. I thought, I'm going to say, Warren, the best win was that game at Dallas, 124-95. Not because, you know, obviously Dallas is a solid team, not a great team, but the response for the Oklahoma City game two nights later against a better team, national TV, Luka and those guys, and for them to kind of – To beat them down like they did, and for them to not, you know, win by almost 30, I thought was an impressive, probably the most impressive win, considering that their pride was on the line for that game. You know, their pride was on the line, and they came back and they played well. They hit Dallas in the mouth first, but there's a lot of really good wins here.
Agreed.
You know, the second game, winning at Miami in the second game, you know, The 3-point win at Memphis, right? Early in the season. That was an impressive win. A 19-point win against the Nuggets. You know, there's been a lot of games you're just like, wow, this team has really responded well. Both of the wins at Brooklyn, where, you know, major rivalry there. You know, could you say the Golden State win? I suppose you could say that, considering that they looked like they were, you know, gonna, you know, they were down and they came back and tied it, you know, late in the game and then weathered the storm in overtime. But I'm gonna say that Dallas game, most impressive win of the year.
All right. You know, again, and that's why we have the conversation, because we're definitely seeing things maybe slightly differently. And, you know, I think when you have a win, like you said, like where they dominate, you even go back to like the Phoenix win before Phoenix kind of like really, you know, kind of shit the bed, so to speak. You know, they were just kind of humming, you know, in the midst of that kind of that road trip. For me, it is, you know, prisoner of the moment, if you will, that win against Golden State. A lot of people might say the Lakers win, but I was like, they blew a lead there and got lucky. So I was like, you know, I mean, it's nice that they got the W, so to speak, but I don't think that's their most impactful win. I think just for my viewpoint, the mental aspect of beating the Warriors, you know, and not allowing them to do, because it was early and Curry, you know, hit that half court three and, you know, he does all his stuff. You know what I mean? And I won't say that Curry's not a showboat per se, but he knows how to get the crowd going, and he does things intentionally that can kind of get under the opponent's skin, if you will, because in some ways he's unstoppable. Right. And, you know, to beat them when Clay, Curry, and Poole all score over 20, Wiggins was back, you know, Golden State was fully healthy, to get that W at home and in a hard-fought game, obviously in overtime as well, I just feel like that was probably the most significant and their best win of this first half, just because it meant so much. Just wouldn't want to have to lose to them again, especially after losing to them in Golden State previously. So we're going to close out here with one final thing, and just your biggest concern for the second half, and I'll start. My biggest concern is just health, and I think we talked about it some weeks ago. I mean, and that's every team. Hey, you got to be healthy to play. But just Mazzulla's, you know, mindset in terms of like, hey, these are young guys. We're going to go out here and get these minutes. But you don't want to sacrifice things, you know, in a load management era in the NBA. Mazzulla is seeming to kind of somewhat buck that trend and say, you know what, go out here and get it done. I think there was a quote about Tatum, you know, in that Golden State game. I was like, I asked him if he wanted to come out, but I wasn't taking him out anyway. So it's just like a courtesy ask. Like, it's so strange. So to me, it's just making sure you can stay healthy or making sure that you have some reinforcements here in some capacity. That's my biggest concern for Boston going into the second half. What about you, G?
Yeah, my concern is just the fatigue. You know, not even health, but more fatigue. Like, you know, playing these guys heavy minutes, are they going to have enough for the long run? And because the big picture is winning the championship and playing into to mid to late June. And that's 6 months from now, Warren, as we know. I mean, that's a wow. That's a half a year from now. So, you know, as much as things of the season seems like it's long, we're a third of the way through the journey. If you're a Celtic fan and you want the team to get to the finals, like it's six more months, right? Or five more months, six more months, maybe five more months. Sorry. Five more months. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're only at the third way through, maybe not even half. So if you're the Celtics, I worry about Mazzulla pushing those guys 48 minutes the other night for Tatum, 41 coming off an injury for Brent. I think there's scientific reasons why players aren't as productive when they play. And you don't want to go Thibodeauian on these players and run them into the ground by the playoffs. So, you know, they're sucking wind in the first quarter of the first playoff game. You know, like you want to ration them out. But so my concern is just fatigue. Like, are they going to just try put so much effort in the regular season? Are they going to be ready and rested for the playoffs? I think that Brad Stevens will come down and tell Joe, okay, guys, okay, Joe, like, this is what we should do. You know, let's develop a rest plan for some of these guys down the stretch. Keep that number one seed, maybe sacrifice a win or two, but let's make sure Tatum and Brown are healthy, because Tatum's saying, you know, I got a, you know, bad finger here. I got this in my wrist. It's like, you know, you don't want him to be all beat up, because it sounded like, and he said that after the playoffs, because he didn't want to make any excuses, I guess, that he was kind of beat up during the finals, and that's why he wasn't at his best. But, you know, obviously Andrew Wiggins had something to do with that too. So fatigue is my biggest concern. I think everything else, depth is there. Could they get another solid player with that roster spot? Yes, they could. But I think fatigue is my major concern.
All right. Good points again, Gary. You know, and shouts out to Noah Vonleh for giving us the roster spot. I think we kind of glazed over that, you know, or we didn't get to record that week. But wishing him well in San Antonio or wherever he ends up winding up. I think that'll do it here for Believe in Celtics, brought to you by Bet Online. Again, make sure you're following us on Twitter at Shaw Sports NBA. Follow him on Twitter at G Washburn Globe. Great, great conversation as Boston heads into the second half of the season. Couple of weeks away here from the trade deadline, man, just exciting stuff. So we'll definitely catch y'all here in the next week or so here, talk about how this 4-game week kind of played out for Boston, and that'll do it here for Boston Celtics here, Bet Online, brought to you by Bet Online, Believe in Celtics. My guy G Money, have a good one, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. Talk to you soon, man. Peace.